Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here with Dante and Isabella this evening. Say hello.
Hi.
Hi.
And we are here to talk about episodes 7 and 8 of CBS All Access new Star Trek show. I guess not really all that new now since we're 8 episodes in, but It is still the newest of the Star Trek franchise. Let's just dive right in. So episode 7, let's see what our title is here. Magic to make the sanest man go mad. And episode 8 is titled, it's in Latin, Civis Pacem Parabellum, which I looked up, which means if you want peace, prepare for war.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they just write that in English?
Because the affectation of having to putting it in the Latin. I'm sure it's probably like some Latin phrase or something like that. But the affectation of putting it in the Latin is actually a point against them in my book. let's self-aggrandize a little bit here.
It's not like this is a well-known phrase like veni, vidi, vici or anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone knows what that means.
Yeah, something that people would recognize. But yes. So anyway, but let's start in order. Let's go to our time travel episode, because there had to be a time travel episode. There had to be time travel.
Because it's Star Trek. It's not really Star Trek. Unless there's time travel.
There has to be time travel. And so we have time travel.
Yep. So can I just start off by saying the fact that that Harry Mudd went ahead and had the whole wrist thing, like Captain Jack from the first season of Doctor Who.
Right.
It just made me so incredibly happy.
I knew I recognized that wrist thing, and I was like, where do I know that from?
Well, it's Fallout is what I was thinking of with it, where you have your Pip-Boy in Fallout, your stats and everything is on your arm. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I never played Fallout, but Captain Jack is so much better than Fallout. I mean, let's be real here.
I'm sure somebody listening will want to fight you over that. It's not me.
I'm positive that many people will fight me over this. But that's okay.
Fallout has a pretty rabid following, but so does Doctor Who, so.
Yeah, I mean, and I basically just have a giant crush on John Barrowman.
Well, let's be real here. As you should.
Who doesn't?
Right.
That is a spectacular question. My dog, probably, because my dog doesn't understand these concepts. Anyway.
So
we can just jump right in. We're just saying, Harry Mudd is just a fantastic gift of a character.
Oh, I just love what they've done with him. He's just wonderful. Now, you have to go back and watch the original series ones, though.
I will have to.
You really should. I should pull them up.
But here's the thing. It's just like, I feel like after watching Rainn Wilson just pretty much destroy every single scene that he's in, just like, if I watch the original series, I feel like I'm just going to be setting myself up for severe disappointment.
Yeah, well, it's different because, the acting in the original series is very dated by its era. As we know with Captain Kirk. So the similar can be said of Harry Mudd in the original as well. But he's still a bright spot in the original series as well.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah. But it's definitely different. But he is definitely in this series one of the standout characters.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he steals every single scene that he's in. There's not a actor on this show who has more charisma just straight up showmanship than he does. It is absolutely refreshing. I kind of wish that the series was about him.
Well, maybe that'll be a spinoff and they'll do the life and times of Harry Mudd.
I mean, I'd be okay with it.
Better call Harry Mudd.
Yeah.
Better Call Harry Mudd. That's a reference I understand. Yes. I'm excited. Oh, come on.
I knew at least Regina would get that one.
Yes. Yep. I do. But yeah, so he's fantastic. And I actually loved this episode. I really thought it was fun. But I tend to like time travel episodes, so.
Well, yeah. Time travel episodes are fun. This one I thought was extremely well done. It didn't suffer from any weird pseudoscience techno babble gobbledygook.
It's a magic, it's a crystal.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they basically were just like, it's a magic crystal. And when they confronted Mudd about it, he was just like, yeah, I don't really know how it works, but it works because reasons.
Which is fine, which is all I need, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, we acknowledge that it works. It's fine. Right. Moving on from there.
Right, right. And I like the way that they dug into his history through Ash, where Ash was saying he talked about breaking into some bank. Mm-hmm. Some like high security bank that he was able to get into and that he was able to case it or whatever, you know.
He was able to memorize all the security procedures because he had infinite tries.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so part of what I loved about this episode was how video game like it was.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
From the start, it just that sensation of, you know, dying and starting over and dying and starting over and dying and starting over just totally put me in the mind of a game. And so I thought that was just really very clever.
Although I'm really glad that they skipped over a lot of the things that annoy me about these kind of episodes.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have to have the same, they changed it slightly every time, and we didn't have to have the same conversations over and over and over.
Right. Well, it's like, because they did a similar episode in Next Generation, right? And it's just like every iteration of it. And this, it was like, they went from the first iteration to like 15, you know?
So, right. Yeah. Right. We were at like, 50, 60 by the end or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. We didn't have to watch each one.
Minimum 53.
Yeah.
At minimum 53, and I really liked how they wedged it in there with Stamets going ahead and finishing sentences and Mudd going in and finishing sentences for conversations that they've already had. I'm like, oh hey, look at that! You're doing all of the repeating so that and getting it out of the way in scene so that we don't have to deal with it as viewers and as consumers of this media. Mm-hmm. It was. Very refreshing, and you know, thank you, Isabella, for bringing that up, because I didn't realize how much I was refreshed by that. Now, but now that you pointed it out,
I find
it
really grating. I find it really grating when this has been done before, and they don't do that, because I'm like, I feel like I'm stuck in a Groundhog's Day loop where I'm just like, I must have felt like how Stamets felt like at the end. They're just like, I need this to stop before I push myself out of an airlock.
I thought that was he had a great reason inside of the episode to forgo all of the repeating of the conversations, because realistically, if this had been just Mudd who was managing the time loop over and over again, everything would have happened the exact same. But with Stamets in there, he manages to go ahead and create a compelling spy versus spy situation here, where a wild card situation where Mudd doesn't know what's happening and doesn't know what's changing from time stream to time stream. Yeah. But Stamets is able to go ahead and provide us, the viewers, with something different every single time, and it periodically moves everything along. And you know, to the point where at the end of the episode, they even cut out the beginning of the party scene.
Right. They knew enough. They knew it had been established enough that they didn't have to go that far back.
Exactly.
They could change it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we know that Tilly has a thing for guys in bands. We know that they kiss. We know that, you know, stuff happens and they get called to the bridge and there's the space whale and, you know, goodness gracious, can I also just say that I'm really concerned for the security of Starfleet vessels if someone could just get inside of a space whale and blow it up.
I know, that was the first thing that I was like, as soon as they beamed it on board, I'm like, okay, so what's in this thing?
Yeah.
There has to be something in it. Like, it's never the thing itself.
No, yeah, exactly.
But I think
evil space whale.
Right, the evil space whale. It had some sort of armor plating though, right? Like
it had a vessel inside of it.
Right, but the creature itself was sort of armor plated so that they read it, which is why it was like,
yeah, it had some sort of like natural armor or scales, yeah, or something
that kept it hidden.
Yeah.
So that when they scanned it, they didn't show up at first that there was anything inside it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. It was a fun episode. It was interesting to watch Tyler and Burnham have a romance begin.
Yeah, I thought that was I thought that was very nice. It allowed us to, I feel like move forward a couple of weeks in their budding relationship without moving forward a whole lot of time inside the story, which is the wonderful and terrible thing about time travel stories.
Yeah, he can play so much with what happens in the characters, and I loved at the end where Ash said, "I'm sorry, I missed our first kiss." Like, I was just like, oh, that's like the sweetest thing.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, Michael and Tyler kiss, and it's beautiful.
It really is. It really was well acted. It was well constructed.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job.
Absolutely. And can I also just say, like, the Emmy or the Oscar award goes to Anthony Rapp for this episode. For just from beginning to end. All right, never mind. Sorry, it goes to Mud, but the runner up goes to Anthony Rapp.
Like, wait.
Yep. The runner up goes to Anthony Rapp from him going from slightly buzzed and drunk to a desperate man on the verge of throwing himself out of an airlock by the end of the episode because he's replayed the same 30 minutes 50 something times, which equates to I don't know how many, like, that's like a day and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
Real time that he's been getting blown up and watching all of his friends die and getting shot and all that other fun stuff. It speaks a lot to him as an actor, and it revealed a whole lot about the softer side of Lieutenant Stamets, because again, you know, we've seen it at the beginning of the series where he was trying to play himself off as a bit of a hard ass, and he was trying to.
Well, and I think he's still doing that to a degree, when we get into episode 8, we can kind of go back to that a little bit, but
yeah, he's trying to go ahead and be the officer that demands respect, but just in that one scene where he realizes, okay, well, we don't have time to go ahead and save everything in this half hour loop, so let me just show you how to dance, and they have these really genuine, what appear to be tender exchanges. And it seems like that is probably going to be the point where Stamets' relationship with Burnham translates from just coworker, officer to officer, to what appears is going to be a genuine friendship. Because even though Burnham doesn't remember all of these things, he does.
Right. Yeah,
and I think that is. Let's see. I thought that was real. It was. I don't know. It was a great piece to develop Stamets. I liked what they've done with him so far. It's just, it really makes me sad that he has to go ahead and do the whole crazy mirror thing. But, but yeah, I absolutely,
you know, something more has to be coming from that as well in terms of. What happens in this episode, because as you pointed out in your notes, you know, Harry Mudd knows that he's the linchpin for the Discovery now.
Yeah.
And just because he's been reunited with Stella doesn't mean that he's going to, one, stay there, or two, have any compunction whatsoever in selling all of the secrets he's already learned to the Klingons once he does get away from her, which he inevitably will.
I mean, and here, and that's the other thing is like, he doesn't even need to, leave Stella's side. You know, like he's a resourceful guy. I'm sure that he can go ahead and set up some sort of clandestine, communication path with the Klingons and just say, "Hey, listen, I found out about what Discovery is.
Right.
Wire me a billion credits or whatever the currency is, and I'll go ahead and give you everything that you need to know."
Yep. I think it's interesting too, the way that so the captain had these dark crystals.
I mean, he's
like sexy, dark matter.
Yeah, these dark matter balls, and that becomes Harry Mudd uses them as a weapon, and then Burnham actually swallows one after she reveals to him who she is and what a price she would pay to. The Klingons would pay for her.
Yeah, to guarantee that he goes ahead and resets the time loop.
Right. Yeah, because she sacrifices herself knowing that she's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys think? Because I thought, whatever the technology is, whatever that is, that has to come back. Like, there has to be more significance to this.
The using of them. Yeah, the dark matter Flintstones vitamins.
Yes. Yeah. Dark matter Flintstones vitamins. Yes.
But. I was just wondering why the heck she swallowed it. That seems extra painful.
I would think so too.
For some reason.
I'm guessing it is easier for her to justify or to guarantee that she's going to die, rather than just going ahead and like. I don't know, like slapping it on her face or something, because then Mudd could theoretically go ahead and like brush it off or whatever. If she swallows it, like he's not going to go ahead and throw a hand down her throat trying to go ahead and get this thing out.
I also thought maybe it was trying to contain it so that like it didn't get on anybody else. Like it would just be.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, she also knows she can't kill him either, because if she kills him, then everything goes kablooey.
Nobody comes back. Yeah. Yeah.
I think they just wanted to make that cool effect.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, and also how tough is Niels, is that? Like, it was, yeah. She's,
that's pretty freaking hardcore.
She's incredible. Absolutely amazing. Resolve of character.
Yeah.
I guess that's one of the things that that if I wanted to nitpick about the episode, I really could, where it seems like she and Tyler got drawn very easily into the whole, being re-explained every single time, to the point where they had all of this time to go ahead and devise plans and convince people. And it almost just seems like this would not have been possible if everybody on the ship didn't have at least some sort of residual memory of the event. Or, maybe that's just a sign of how much Lorca seems to trust her. Because ultimately, like in the final iteration of that time loop, they go ahead and they rewire the captain's chair because it's a non-critical system, and they're able to go ahead and do their techno mumbo jumbo. But I guess just due to the layout of the episode, we don't know how many iterations they needed to go through in order to get to that point.
Right. Like how many times did it take them to figure that out as the solution?
Which is
interesting, but I think that's part of what they're kind of building through the series is Lorca's trust of both Burnham and Tyler. And I think he puts the two of them above even Saru, who is his first officer, because he feels like he's a war captain and they're more tested than he is. And they're definitely building on the loyalty factor and the fact that he would give priority to the two of them.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, I honestly, I can't wait for either the mid-season or the season finale when she has to make the choice to betray someone again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that this is going to happen, but this is just my bold prediction. Yeah. That she's going to be put into the position where she has to betray a captain again, and we're going to have to see what happens. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm not happy that I'm looking forward to that, because that means that I have to continue to give CBS all my money.
Well, not all your money, but a percentage of it through, let's see, when are they airing through next year?
I think it's like January to March or something like that.
March. February 18th.
Okay, cool. So yeah. I have March, April, May, June, July. Yeah, okay. So I'll have 5 months off in between that.
Yes.
I'm all right with that. So, anyways.
Yes. All right. So do we have anything else about episode 7, or do we want to jump into 8?
I mean, I love Stella. She was incredible.
Oh my God. Stella was awesome.
Like the 5 seconds she was on screen.
Yes. Stella is incredible. Again, you need to see the original series, because they didn't make her look, but they cast someone who looked very much like the Stella in the original series. Mm-hmm. Just with like facial, like they did a really good job of sort of honoring who Stella was in that, which I really appreciated as mm-hmm. well. So some of the swagger that who plays Mud Rain Wilson?
Rain Wilson, yeah.
Rain Wilson has the same kind of swagger that the actor who played Mud originally had as well. But they did a good job with how she looks and how she talks and, you know, everything. They just, it was very enjoyable for the purist over here.
Yay!
To see them honor the original series so well with the casting of that one. And that I love the way the lead up was, like, you know, he thought that it was the Klingons, and I'm like, well, there's no way it's the Klingons. It's got to be something else going on here. There has to be something else to happen. And he said, two people. And I'm like, two people? The Klingons wouldn't send two people. They'd send six.
The Klingons would be sending a raiding party.
Yeah, exactly. They'd be sending a raiding party. So you at least have a few. So I'm like, okay, this is wrong. They just said two people. Who is it?
Mm-hmm. And then it was Stella. Literally laughed out loud.
Yeah,
I was very happy with the conclusion of that episode. And of course, you've already said about at the actual conclusion of the episode, I'm very sorry that I missed my first kiss with you. Like that was pretty awesome.
Yep.
You know, if I hadn't welded my tear ducts shut, for all future iterations of me crying, I probably would shed a tear.
Okay, so the two episodes of the original series are I, Mud, and Mud's Women.
Okay.
So those are the two you have to go look for.
Oh, there we go.
Yes.
I might do that.
Anybody else who wants to know the origin of Hardcore Fenton Mud?
Is his name really Hardcore?
Hardcourt.
Hardcourt. Okay. Yes. Because I'm sitting there just like, Hardcore? Like, I mean, like, you're pretty awesome. I don't know if you're Hardcore, though.
Yeah, Hardcourt Fenton Mud.
Okay.
Which you only learn in the iMud episode when you actually see Stella.
Okay, I gotcha.
Because otherwise he's just Harry Mud, I think. I think he's just, anyway, I might be wrong about that one.
The purist is wrong about something.
There's a little fraying on my purist fabric.
Love it.
All right, so let's go to our Latin title. If you want peace, prepare for war.
Mm-hmm.
This episode was not what I was expecting.
This episode was not what I wanted. and also not what I was expecting either.
So essentially in this episode, Ash, Michael, and Saru are sent to planet Pavo.
Mm-hmm.
To attempt a way to identify and break through the Klingon cloaking system.
Yep.
And they think the native technology to this planet is going to allow them
to do that.
To do that.
Because technobabble reasons.
Yeah, well, pretty much.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense to me.
Yep. So
it was like magic sounds. Cool.
Yeah, magic sounds, big giant crystal thing. Got it.
Yes. Clouds, sparkly clouds that vaguely look like shapes of
people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I liked quite a few aspects of this, but it really did have a couple of moments where I was like, huh? Mm-hmm. And yeah. Just the whole concept in and of itself was weird. Had they mentioned Parvo before? Do you guys remember?
Nope.
Pavo. It sounded like Parvo in the show, but it's spelled P-A-H-V-O, Pavo.
They had not.
Why you got to watch with closed captioning on.
Yeah, that's probably true. I started doing that for your Game of Thrones, because then it really does help.
Yeah, they had not mentioned Pavo before. They went through a very long, arduous to listen to exposition dump in the beginning of the episode, where they let us, the audience, know that Pavo is a place that has been like classified by Starfleet, but no one's really like done anything with it or something.
Right, explored it or been there.
Yeah, no one's really explored it. There, you know, the Starfleet had no indication that there were any sentient life forms on there, and it was heretofore just like undiscovered, untouched, and they even needed to go ahead and land like a billion miles away from giant crystal Pride Rock thing, because because I don't know, something happened with the static
interference
with their teleporters. And it was all just really clunky. I'm like, okay, cool, I get it, like, y'all need to go ahead and, you know, I don't know, you have to give them a reason to go all Lord of the Rings on it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I get it, cool, that's fine.
Even though Saru can run really fast, apparently.
Yeah, even though Saru can run really fast. So that begs the question, why didn't they just send Saru? You know, like, what does he need the two other people for? Like, just load
I'm
him
sure
up with
they
the back?
Have some sort of, like, no solo landing parties thing.
Well, they could have just sent him on ahead.
They could have just sent him on ahead.
Go on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, given what ended up happening, I don't think that would have ended any better.
I mean, but his threat ganglia, you know, they should have warned him.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that too. Go ahead.
That's what I didn't know. Were the Povins?
Povins, I think. We're just going to call them Povins.
Sounds like puffins.
It does sound like puffins.
I like puffins. They're cute.
Are the Povins actually malevolent? Because I don't think that's what they were trying to do with him.
I don't think so either. I don't think that they were. I don't think that they were malevolent. I think that they just were. I mean, they were just trying to go all in on their whole, like, we need to bring harmony, and the best way to bring harmony is to make everybody think the same.
Right.
You know, so like, I don't think it was malevolent. I think it was just an extreme. It was just an extreme ideology that we got to see physically manifested through Saru.
Well, that, and I don't think if it had been someone else, I don't think the reaction would have been the same, because he was like begging them for peace.
Yeah,
he's never felt before.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of the complication in the communication with them from Saru when he has that scene where he's suffering. So to explain the episode a little bit more, the bionome, I don't know exactly the way the planet is. There's like a symbiotic relationship between these little
sparkly,
glittery entities, and essentially the entire planet. And they create a resonance, a sound, just in and of itself. And for the humans who have lower, you know, hearing, it's very peaceful. But for Saru, who is a prey species, I know, I was trying to figure out like how you would describe him.
Yeah, I forget exactly what the name of his species is, but he has
Kelpians.
Kelpians?
Yes, like kelp.
Like kelp, but people.
Yes.
Okay, so the Kelpians. So he, and this is, he said this at least in one or two other episodes where his entire people were bred to be on the lowest possible part of the food chain on whatever mm-hmm. planet they're from.
Right.
So they have evolved with the whole threat ganglia thing, and they have evolved to the point where like they can run really fast. You know, they're basically like, I don't know, they're basically like the gazelle of space. Like, yeah. Like all they can do is really just like run away and not do much else. Except maybe sometimes they'll get a lucky shot in with their horns or whatever.
But yeah. So that level of hearing that comes from that.
Yeah, from
evolution, right?
Yeah, from a heightened sense. And that's the other thing that he brought up in this episode. They've always feel afraid.
Yeah, he's always fearful, regardless of his level of comfort or what kind of a situation. He's always fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he asks, he doesn't. So he's suffering, and it's nighttime, and they're trying to understand. Because they didn't anticipate a sentient being. Like, they didn't think they were coming into a planet that had people they had to actually deal with or beings that they could communicate with. They mm-hmm. thought they were just going on a planet that had lots of pretty flowers and, you know, these crystals that they needed to use to try to communicate and try to break through the shields. So they have to change their mission halfway through, where they can't just go in and use the planet such as they will, because they have sentient beings that they have to get permission from now.
Mm-hmm.
So they are spending the night and they're sleeping, and for Saru, he's absolutely being tortured by the sound. And so he just goes and asks, can I please have a moment of peace, without quantifying it, saying, you're just too noisy for me.
Yeah.
And so they then like make him hippie Saru.
Basically, yeah, they infest him, and they basically just give him like the best mushroom high ever.
Yeah,
absolutely ever.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
And which we find out at the end of the episode, we find out that he, you know, the always feeling afraid, and that, you know, the level of peace that had been taken from him now that he had, you know, because of course it can't last, and he can't stay in this state with this on this planet. But he's trying. That's what he tries to do. He tries to sabotage them and tries to get the three of them to stay on the planet where they can be protected and where he can protect them from the threat of the Klingons.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It gives him. Yeah. I mean, and like, I get it. Like, it's nice. I like that we get to see this part of Saru. I just thought that the execution of it in the episode was just, I mean, it was heavy handed. It was really predictable. Like as soon as he went outside, I was like, "Oh, well, look at that! Something's gonna happen." And then they went ahead and they, you know, possessed him, for lack of a better term. And then I was just like, "Oh, well, I wonder what's gonna happen next." He's gonna walk in. He's gonna be very well rested, and then he's gonna go ahead and try to kill his teammates and or try to you know, get them possessed as well. Like, for a second there, like, I thought that we were seeing the birth of a new Borg-ish species.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I could see that. Like, the connection where the piece or whatever would be the thing that they offered instead of, you know, resistance would still be futile.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just thought that it was, yeah, I don't know. I just thought that it was clunkily done. I didn't think it was particularly well written. I just, if I hadn't had such negative experiences fast forwarding on the CBS All Access app, I would have fast forwarded. but I didn't because I don't like fast forwarding through that app.
So the end of this half of this, the show or this part of the story, and then we'll get into the Klingon section next. So, of course, they manage to communicate with Discovery. They get transported off the planet and back to the ship. And then at the very end of the episode, we find out that the Pavans have sent out a message to the Klingons, telling them to come to the planet.
Because Burnham and Tyler were able to try to communicate with them. Because, you know, obviously, like, there was the big fight, and they tried to go ahead and you know, messed up the communication device, and she was like, listen, like, we're just trying to go ahead and stop an intergalactic war with the Klingons. Like, that's it. That is all we need your crystals for. And then all of a sudden, crystals worked. And then I just want to make sure that our listeners know, like, the reasons why the Pavans contacted the Klingons was not malicious.
Right.
It was an extension of that radical mindset. They wanted peace at all costs.
Right.
And they think, oh, well, that's cool. If we just bring these two sides together and they can just talk it out. Yeah, and then maybe they can go ahead and have some hugs, some hot chocolate. Everything will be great.
So the Pavans are the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah, Pavans are pretty much the...
We came, we saw, we talked about it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, diplomacy's great.
That's what they think is going to happen. They don't, you know, they don't understand the Klingons, and they don't understand the threat that the Klingons, or that the Klingons aren't going to talk, because the Klingons have no interest in talking, but they don't see or understand that necessarily, and they just think that they can, you know, bring about this peace, and they can sort of force it about, they think. At least that's the idea that we're given. So
precisely.
That, of course, is going to bring us into the next episode, which is going to be episode 9, and this season, the mid-season finale, the episode of that is Into the Forest I Go.
Mm. It's going to have a lot of Klingon fighting. Can't wait for Klingon fighting. Because maybe the Klingons will be cool.
Maybe the Klingons will be cool. We'll see what happens. The Klingon arc in episode 8, I appreciated more than I have pretty much every other Klingon arc.
Yeah.
So I could pay attention.
Yeah.
But I zone out.
You didn't zone out.
Improvement.
It is. Yeah. It is. But part of that, I think, was because they were speaking English through part of it.
I was very happy about that. So let's set the scene for our dear listeners here.
Yes.
As you remember from last from episode, it was 6. Episode 6, Admiral Carnwall was captured in a big cliffhanger, and it was great. We finally catch up with Admiral Carnwall. She is being held in a Klingon prison cell, and she is approached by, I forget the name of the Klingon person, but it was the one who was trying to make an alliance with the Torchbearer. That, you know,
Lorel, I think her name is.
Lorel, yes. Yes. So it's been a couple episodes since we've seen her, and she is approached by Lorel with a very interesting proposition. The proposition being that she wants to defect from the Klingon Empire and wants basically diplomatic immunity by Starfleet. And she wants to contribute to Starfleet's efforts to defeat the Klingons. So now that we're on this cliffhanger, we have several questions unanswered.
Yes.
First of all, I mean, was she legit about this?
Yeah, which she does say in one of the other episodes that she comes from the House of Deceit, essentially, and lies. So this is like part of her makeup. So it's like, well, who?
That's why she's an interrogator.
Right. Yeah. Who do we believe? How do we trust her? Do we trust her?
And I mean, if you were going to try to gain the general's trust, how best to gain her sympathy so she'll tell you things?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then, there's the other thing is, like, I think it kind of backfired on her, because the new Klingon dude, the new Klingon guy with the red painty face,
Cole. K-O-H-L. K-O-L.
Cole. Okay, so the chain of cruddy department stores is not his doing. Gotcha. So, you know, so Cole, he also doesn't believe her.
Right.
She pleads to him, says, "Hey, let me go ahead and make a pledge of loyalty to you, and I will interrogate this person, this admiral, in order to gain your favor, gain your trust." And she does that, and he doesn't believe her.
Nope.
He doesn't believe her afterwards. And he basically throws her into the brig as well. Now that, I guess that's kind of skipping to the end of the episode. We made a big chunk in the middle. Because because there was a moment where Cornwall says, okay, let's do this. And they're miming, like, you know, taking the prisoner down the hall to be transferred into the holding cells, you know, transfer holding right. cells like they did in the Death Star, you know. and someone just kind of pops out and is just like, where are you taking the prisoner? And they have this wonderful little exchange. Like, I've never met another woman like you. And they're just, or something like that. Right. What is the little exchange that they have?
It was, I don't know if I remember exactly what it was either, but it was something along those lines of you're my equal, or I feel like we're similar, or something like that.
Yeah, it was, we don't know the exact words, but it was a mutual admission of respect.
Right.
From two bitter enemies. And they ultimately, like, I thought that they were just like staging a fight to go ahead and show that, you know, like, hey, look at it. Like, I'm still totally a cool Klingon warrior person. And look what I'm doing to this captain. And then she throws her into a wall and basically like electrocutes her on a giant
wall lamp. Into a power conduit.
Yeah, into a power conduit.
Yeah.
Like giant wall lamp power conduit. It's like the same thing.
Yeah.
And like electrocutes her and then starts dragging her off by her ankles, unconscious, caveman style.
Yes.
And leaves her in this.
I think, and I'm not 100% sure because I thought it was a little ambiguous, but I thought she took her back to her ship. And he, the bad guy, mm-hmm. commander with Cole. the Cole with the two red lines, he mm-hmm. killed all of her complement.
Yes.
So her crew is dead. So I think, mm-hmm. I don't know, I might suspect that Cornwall isn't dead, that the Admiral isn't dead.
Yeah.
But just knocked out, but she wanted her to look like she was dead, so she had to make it really count.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's why... Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they almost escaped. They almost escaped, but for her pride,
right?
Like, because honestly, like, if the Klingon lady, I forget her name already. It doesn't matter. I don't care. If she had just gone in there, sucked down her pride, and just said, "All right, well, this guy's a giant jerk, and I hate him," and then just left and said, "I'm gonna let Starfleet get my revenge for me." Then everything would have been fine. But the fact that she went back out there, put Cornwall in danger, put herself in danger, you know, and it's basically screwed any chance that she had of defecting cleanly. Does that make any sense? I feel like I'm rambling. I might be rambling. I'm not
sure. No, that makes sense.
It makes sense. You know, I think... you know, like I was trying to say as you were talking, like, if they did that, then there wouldn't be an episode. So, you know, there had to be the conflict, and they had to create the conflict in there. So,
of course, yeah.
And I think all we've seen really of her character has been pride like that, mm-hmm. Where she feels like, I'm trying to think of a parallel for Game of Thrones, but like, one of the characters, she's almost like Ned Stark in,
in the first season.
In the first season when, you know, he thinks he's going to outsmart, or not outsmart, but that the truth is going to prevail. So really, yeah. She's a little like Cersei. Okay, so she's more like Cersei. So she thinks that she's playing the best game. She thinks she's going to best everybody, that she's going to say all the right things to... Mm-hmm. to get everybody to believe her in each situation that she's in. And so it is pride, and it is this kind of overinflated idea she has about herself and who she is that's at least partly to blame for this mm-hmm. kind of this situation that she's now in. And I can't remember exactly where it was that it ended with her. Is she still in the ship? I don't feel
like she's back on Cole's ship, isn't she?
That's why I don't remember.
I think she's still on Cole's ship.
Okay.
So I thought it ended with her getting the paint on her face, and then
it ended. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
but then he says, "I don't believe you," and throw her in the brig.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of it. Because she goes, oh, so that's what you're saying. She went back. Like, she could have just left with Cornwell and her dead crew.
Right.
That's what you were saying. Oh, I was confused. I was thinking you were saying she could leave at the end of the episode.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I get it now. I'm sorry. I was a little behind. It happens to the best of us, right?
Yeah, but that whole part of the episode was really ambiguous.
Yeah.
I still don't know anyone stands.
Like, why? I don't understand why he would mark her and then say, "I'm throwing you in jail."
Mm-hmm. I'm marking you. Basically, like stripping her of her rank, basically.
Yeah, I think he wanted to go ahead and show to everybody, like, "Hey, listen, like, I knew this from the start, and you know, and." I feel like he was trying to basically go ahead and say, like, I've just conned a con man.
Right.
You know, she came from the House of Deceit, and he just bamboozled her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she thought she got away scot-free, and here she is in shackles.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, so, yeah, so we'll see, and I'm assuming we'll see next episode. Mm-hmm. What happens with her, because there's no way that, because that's this at the end of the episode we see them get the message from Pavo about
where they are.
Come to us and we will make this right. So we'll see.
I mean, I'm hoping for some laser blast and phaser action.
Yep.
I'm hoping for some, you know, Klingons headbutting people.
Yep. Yeah. I'm hoping for some physical fights and some. Mm-hmm. And I'll be interested to see if there is something that this symbiotic, sparkly, glittery aliens can actually do something.
I mean, I'm kind of hoping that they go ahead and they just take over Cole and just be like, "Yo."
Yeah. Wouldn't that be interesting?
You need to be cool.
Yeah.
You know, let's all be like little Fonzies.
Yes.
What's Fonzie like? He's cool.
Yeah. So I guess those are kind of our predictions for the next episode. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yep. So here's, I guess, just a bold question for all of you. Will we see any deaths? Will we see any deaths on our protagonist
characters?
Yep.
Mm. I'll write a list down if we have any guesses. I think something bad's going to happen to Stamets because, well, of course, it was alluded to in the next week that he's not doing well. He's showing the same sort of wear that the tardigrade felt. The mm-hmm. tardigrade was experiencing from the jumps. Mm-hmm. And we see a little bit of that in this, right? Because or is that just
where he's really confused this episode, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, that's right. He was really confused.
Until he asks him about it?
Yes, until he sort of corners him about it and is like, "You need to talk about this."
Yeah.
And I'm not going away until you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he explained this wonderfully architected moral dilemma that he has to put himself in, where he either suffers silently and gets no help from his partner, who probably can help him, but then again, like, if he goes ahead and he tells him, then he gets shipped away to some academy hospital where he gets to be poked and prodded, and he doesn't get to see his husband anymore, or his husband has to go ahead and lie, and then if he's found out, he gets court-martialed.
Right.
Which, yeah, it's this impossible choice that he has to make.
Yeah.
And it was incredible that Tilly was able to go ahead and pick up on that, and that he was, and basically eke that information out.
Yeah. The way she could draw it out of him. But again, Tilly and Saru stand as like two of my favorite characters.
Oh yeah.
And Stamets as well. And I've always had a soft spot for supporting characters when I was in my brief acting era of my life, I always liked the supporting characters better than the leads, because the leads always had all the boring stuff to do. The supporting characters always had the fun lines.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I always had a soft spot for them. So I really have been enjoying this side of secondary characters in this. So, and I enjoyed our female Klingon, like you said, like the dialogue between Laurel and Cornwall. I really appreciated having sort of two strong female characters and in charge characters in that scene. I thought that was really cool. And again, it wasn't in Klingon, so we didn't have to.
Yeah, it was great. And you know what? Like, and it passed the Bechdel test like by a mile.
Yeah. Well, and the show does kind of generally. I mean, it's the first sort of hints of romance that we have between any of the female characters are in the time travel episode, and end up being important to the plot. So, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, it eventually serves a purpose other than just having the female characters talk about a guy.
Yeah, it was. It's fairly refreshing. That's one of the big successes I can say about this show.
So yes, absolutely.
Pretty much everything passes the Bechdel test.
Yes. All right. So for our next episode, we are going to record next week. So we're going to record about episode 9 and the season, the mid-season finale. And we'll kind of give a wrap up and then maybe some predictions that we're going to do for the second half of this season. So keep those in mind as we're watching. If you're watching and listening, we'd love to hear your feedback. If you're watching Star Trek Disco,
stay alive, stay alive. No.
Yeah, which is not what the Klingons are trying to do. They were trying to keep everyone dead.
They are.
I mean, they're on a thing called the Ship of the Dead.
Yes, this is true.
Anyways, Star Trek Disco.
Star Trek Disco.
I can't take myself.
Yes. So let us know in the comments. Catch us on Twitter at The Geek Embassy. Like our Facebook page at The Geek Embassy. And yeah, we'd love to hear what you're thinking. Do you like the Klingon? The Klingon language? I had a friend of mine say he thought the Klingon was really pronounced very well. And I'm like, yes. Still takes forever for them to say anything, but yeah.
it's like if they had an entire Harry Potter movie in Parsel tongue. I'm just like, oh god.
Yeah. Or like that Star Wars holiday special where they had the first 25 minutes in Wookiee.
Yeah.
Yes, I've watched it.
Oh my god.
And it's terrible.
It is terrible. I've only seen clips though. Okay. All right. Until next time, get your disco on.
God, I hate you so much.